Yesterday, I mentioned the purpose of the practice or the purpose of spiritual life. The purpose of spiritual life is to actualize Sanzen Gakudo, which means to surrender one's body and mind to tranquility. Tranquility means the way to surrender one's body and mind to the tranquility is to study or to learn the way. The way manifests in two ways. One is it manifests itself as absolute. The ultimate identity of existence, the absolute itself, which is completely, absolutely tranquil, still. But it is not something still as stagnant water. It is always active. So the way appears as everydayness, every aspect of everydayness. So tranquility penetrates every aspect of everydayness. That is the way. So that is the purpose of practice, the purpose of spiritual life, we say usually. So today I would like to talk what attitude we should take to the practice, so-called Sanzen Gakudo. Yesterday I mentioned Sanzen usually is translated as the practice, but originally something as something more the practice. So I mentioned Sanzen is to surrender yourself, to surrender your body and mind to something, to Zen, to tranquility. This is Sanzen. I would like to talk about what attitude we should take to the practice of this kind in terms of 3 points. One is bodhicitta, body-mind. Second is faith. Third is direct, the transmission, direct transmission of the teaching, direct touch of Dharma. let me say bodhicitta today. In Gakudo Yojinshu, points to watch in the Buddhist training, page 48 of the book Zen Master Dogen, he said, first of all, the body mind is known by many names, but they all refer to the one mind of the Buddha. The Venerable Nagarjuna said, the mind that sees into the flux of arising and decaying and recognizes the transient nature of the world is also known as the body mind. Why then is temporary dependence on this mind called the body mind? When the transient nature of the world is recognized, the ordinary selfish mind doesn't arise, neither does the mind that seeks for fame and profit. So, I think this is number one of the Gakudo Yojinshu, chapter one. Title is The Need to Awaken to the Body Mind, to Arouse Body Mind. The Need to Arouse Body Mind, to Awaken to the Body Mind. So, here are three points. First of all, you have to arouse the body mind. In order to arouse the body mind, you have to have the insight of impermanence. You have to insight impermanent. And if you insight the truth of the impermanence, you naturally are free from selfish mind. Here are 3 points there. The body, arousing body mind, the insight of the impermanence, forsaking the selfish mind. there is a problem that it is difficult for us to see clear relation between the bodhicitta and body mind, arousing body mind, and the impermanence, insight of the impermanence. Why we have to practice the insight of impermanence in order to awaken the body mind? It's a little bit difficult for us to see that point. And also, if you realize impermanence, naturally you can be free from egoism. This is also a little difficult to understand. So, I want to say as best as I can, about this point. Bodhicitta is the short term of short word of the mind of Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi in the Prajnaparamita Sutra. We say the perfect, complete, the perfect, the supreme enlightenment itself. That is a translation from Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi in Sanskrit. Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi is a perfect, complete, supreme enlightenment. Means a state of perfect enlightened being. Perfect enlightened being. Trees, birds, all sentient, all are in the state of perfect enlightened being. In other words, enlightened, all are enlightened being. According to the Buddha Shakyamuni's teaching, all are Buddha. All are Buddha. So arousing body mind. Arousing the body mind means arousing or awaken to the enlightened being. Awaken to the truth that all are in the state of enlightened being. Or awaken to the truth that all are Buddha. This is to arouse the body-mind or to awaken to the body-mind. That's why Dogen Zenji also says the body-mind is known by many names, but they all refer to the one mind of the Buddha. So one mind of the Buddha. The one mind of the Buddha means the Buddha only. Okay. The bodhicitta, citta is the mind, but a mind is not the individual mind. This mind is universal mind, universal life. Okay. Open to all kinds of beings, that is called mind, with capital M. This is a mind of the body mind. And this mind is exactly a state of enlightenment, because this mind is only one mind. Penetrating to all sentient beings. So this is one mind. So that one mind is, when you realize it, called Buddha. So, for one mind of the Buddha. So body mind is to realize the one mind of the Buddha. In other words, we have to realize the truth that all are Buddha. usually, body mind is translated in English, the way-seeking mind. So, I think way-seeking mind means kind of aspiration for seeking something. Okay? Aspiration for the big mind, that is the way-seeking mind. So the aspiration for the way or aspiration for the big mind. So constantly we try to keep this aspiration for the big mind and the way based on the truth which all are Buddha. So in the record of the things heard, book 2, number 14, Dogen Zenji mentions about the bodhicitta. First is only that the aspiration of joyful longing be earnest. For example, suppose a person has a conscious desire to steal a precious jewel, a desire to defeat a powerful enemy, or a desire to embrace a distinguished beauty. While traveling, abiding, sitting, and reclining in the midst of affairs as they pass, though various different events come up, he goes along seeking an opening, his mind occupied with his quest. Okay? So to arise the body mind, to arouse body mind is you must be continually mindful of the truth that we are Buddha. Under all circumstances, walking, sitting, standing, reading, wherever you may go, or whatever kind of situation occurs in your life, favorable situation or unfavorable condition, we have to continually be mindful of this truth that we all are Buddha. We doesn't mean only human beings. All are Buddha anyway. So that is pretty difficult for us. Because we can practice the truth, we are Buddha, only when we are under favorable conditions. But it's very difficult for us to practice body mind under unfavorable conditions. But Dogen Zenji mentions constantly we have to do it. This is not only the Buddhist practice. Whatever you do, if you have really seriously seeking for something, okay, just like this example Dogen Zenji mentions, if you try to steal jewel or big amount of money from the bank, anyway, all day, you have to think of it, how to steal it. So your life is completely occupied, money, jewel, okay, constantly. that's why Dogen Zenji mentions, though various different events come up, he goes along seeking an opening his mind occupied with his quest. Okay. This is called arousing the body mind. Then Dogen Zenji mentions next, in this way, when the aspiration to seek the way has become sincere, either during the period of soul concentration on sitting or when dealing with the illustrative example of the people of olden times, or when meeting the teacher, when one acts with true aspiration, though his aim be high, he can hit it. Though it be deep, he can finish it out. And also Dogen Zenji mentioned, with this mind so falsely earnest, there can be no failure of attainment. So that is body mind. Okay, body mind. Constantly, you have to be mindful of this truth. We are Buddha. That under all circumstances. This is called, according to Vimala Kyuri Sutra, straightforward mind, according to the Bob Sermon, Robert Sermon, this book, he translated that straightforward mind as the positive thought, positive, very positive, you know, direct, okay, constantly, directly. There is strong, steadfast aspiration for seeking the truth, for the truth, toward which your effort is directed constantly. Okay, constantly your effort should be directed toward the truth, which we are Buddha, under all circumstances. Without swaying away to the right, to the left, constantly aiming this, that truth. That is positive thought. That is called straightforward mind in Chinese, we say. But in Tibetan, a text book, he translated positive thought. Yes, it is positive thought. Because your effort should be directed straightly. Without going zigzag, anywhere straightly, you have to aim at that one. Under all circumstances, this is so-called straightforward mind. So bodhicitta in Vimala Kyuri Sutra, or in general Buddhism, we usually use the bodhicitta as well as direct, straightforward mind. Almost the same meaning. So bodhicitta is constantly direct our mind, our bodies, toward the truth which we are Buddha. Okay? It's not so easy, but we have to do it. This is purpose of the practice, purpose of the spiritual life. But when you face difficulties, very natural, we forget that one, because it is pretty easy for us to burn out, to burn our emotions, and to be very emotional, very emotional, very critical, but without insight of the truth. So, that's why it's not so easy. Okay? It's not so easy. So intellectually, even though we understand the truth, we are Buddha. But actually, it's very difficult to practice because emotion, our habitual customs cannot accept straightway. So always we make some problem under unfavorable conditions. So, but if you want to practice, if you want to accomplish the purpose of spiritual life, anyway, constantly we have to seek for this one. So, spiritual world is quite different from usual world. Whatever happens in the spiritual world, we try to keep all things in peace and harmony, okay? Instead of stirred up. Okay? But in the usual world, we stir up. In other words, what would you say? Open it, everything. If you don't feel, scream it. Okay? If you like it, you know, express your joy, pleasure, you know, something like that. But it's all right to open everything. But I don't think it is a perfect way of the living in peace. So very naturally, if you do it, in many ways, we stir up our lives and others' life. So it's very difficult to keep all in peace and harmony. So in the spiritual world, we try to keep all things in peace and harmony. That's pretty hard, not so easy. It's not so easy. That's why every day we have to continually practice on an everyday basis. To practice this one on everyday basis. So next, in order to arouse or awaken to the body mind, Dogen Zenji mentions, anyway, we have to awaken, we have to insight the impermanence, the truth, how transient the world is, how fragile human life is. Okay. Dogen Zenji mentions in the number 14 of book 2, he also says, and to arise, and to arouse this determination, it is necessary to earnestly contemplate the impermanence of the world. And this determination is to continue to practice the arousing body mind, the arousing the truth we are Buddha. So it is necessary to earnestly contemplate the impermanence of the world. This task is not something which is to be considered as the temporarily prescribed method of contemplation, and it is not that you should invent something non-existent to think about. it is the truth in reality right before your eyes. This is the insight of impermanence. It's not idea. We can try to think of it. It's not, there is no particular pattern. We can be the mindful of it, so-called impermanence. No. Impermanence is something real, okay, right in front of you. In other words, your body, so-called five skandhas, are nothing but impermanent. They're transient. But still, we can see impermanent objectively, five skandhas. We understand intellectually, but we don't touch directly how impermanent each of the five skandhas are. We don't. We are always looking at impermanence objectively. So that's why Dogen Zenji mentions this task is not something which is to be considered as a temporarily described method of contemplation. It is not that you should invent something non-existent to think about. It is the truth in reality, right before your eyes. So, but impermanence. Thinking impermanence means the truth that all are moving. Usually we say change, continuous change. So anyway, all are moving, okay? Without exceptions, all are moving, okay? Including body, physical and mental state of beings, all are moving, okay? But all are moving not separately, all are moving with interpenetrating, interconnection, connecting each other with each other. This is a moving, constantly moving. For instance, if I see the world, immediately the world look at me. So I cannot see world just in terms of my ideas. Okay? So I see, and then, well, I see the winter, immediate winter look at me. So very naturally, I can handle the world, what I have seen. But on the other hand, there is a world I cannot handle because I am a being watched by, you know, the world. So how can I deal with? I don't know. How the world winter look at me? I don't know. But this is exactly the simultaneously, the moment when I look at the world look at me, simultaneously. In other words, that is the teaching of interdependent co-origination, we said. In other words, everything, without exception, they cannot exist without relating, well, without connecting with you, okay? So even though the Japan, what you have never been there, but Japan exists. As long as Japan exists, it is connected with you. Even though you don't see, you don't cognize Japan right now, but it is connected with you. That's why we say Japan exists. So, in other words, there is nothing which exists without relating with your cognition. So always, all are related with you. Okay? Japan and Nicaragua and different the planets which you have never been, or all airs, the skies, all are connected with you. So, from this point, all the world holds a moving means you are moving. You are moving. Why? Because moving means to dichotomize things in two, okay? Separate things in two. And then they can look at them, each other, simultaneously. For instance, I look at myself. Then if I look at myself, I can think who I am. And then I can get the result. And then I try to judge the result which I have seen. And then next, I can evaluate. Okay? Then next, I can feel what I can feel like or dislike, something like that. In that process of cognition, we always looking at myself objectively. Is that clear? We always look at ourselves objectively at a little distance. It's very quickly. That's why in Yogacara, there the mind always looking at the mind in the four ways. Subject and object, and also third one is corroborating the subject and the object. Okay? The fourth one is corroborating the third one. Okay? In other words, third one corroborates the existence of the subject and the object. So called, oh, this is karagiri. Okay? But on the other end, another one is, fourth one is corroborating the third. In other words, try to get the proof. Okay? Who I know what the result is. Always. That temporarily, you know, the Yogacara that they divided the functioning of mind like this in four ways, but practically speaking, in constantly, for countlessly, in many ways, anyway, the mind functioning like that. Okay? So that is called dualism. Okay, dichotomy. That is called moving. Mind is vibrating. Okay. So if I see the world, immediately my mind moves. To see the world means the vibration of the mind. Okay. My mind is vibrating. And then I can see the world. And then world simultaneously is vibrated. Then my mind is vibrated. So simultaneously, always there is a vibration of the mind between the world and the I, between the I and I, always. This is always looking at something objectively, okay? So the vibration of the mind is also vibrating in many ways, okay? Many ways. Some vibration of the mind is very coarse.
some vibration of the mind is very fine. But among the coarse, the nature of the vibration, still the coarser of the coarse vibration of the mind. This is really usual attachment towards self. Okay? Towards self. And the finer of the coarse vibration of the mind, there is attachment to, what would you say? Well, object, dharma, object. If you do that, then you seem to be free from the self and also object. But when you are out of the meditation, you pretty easily attached to the dharma, object. Okay. Sensuous object, so-called red, yellow, like or dislike, and something like that. Existentialism, so something like that. That kind of thing is called dhamma attachment. Very fine, the finer of the coarse vibration of the mind. Then you can create some defilements. Okay. If you attach to the your-ism, well, it is fine, but it's not. Ism itself is fine, but you create a real problem. And also, among the fine vibration of the, you know, the mind, still there are the coarser of the fine vibration of the mind, and also the finer of the fine vibration of the mind. You create some problem, a big question, created by the finer of the fine vibration of the mind. This is completely, we don't know what it is. For instance, this is according to the awakening of the faith. I mentioned last time, anyway. In order to reach the target stage aboard, you have to be free from the final of the final of the fine vibration of the mind. Okay? There is a defilement created by this. Okay? Means. Yesterday I mentioned when you wake up, okay, what you have recognized is after first moment of awakening, awake, okay, wake up, okay? But you don't know the very beginning of the first thought, first waking up. You don't know what it is because it is very finer of the fine vibration of the mind. Because this is the partition between the truth, body, the enlightened state of the being, and also the unenlightened state of the being. Okay, in the partition, okay, there is a very same partition there between what temporarily I may say in order to explain, but actually no partition. Okay. So when you sleep. As a one, you don't know whether there is a sleeping or not, okay? Because you are one with the sleep, so no concept of the sleep, okay? So So it's exactly sleep, you become one with the nature of the sleep, which is called no trace of the sleep. Okay? Then you participate in the truth, okay? But on the other end, when you wake up, immediately you can go to unenlightened world, okay? Passing through very quickly, like this. At that time, you miss this partition. This is the first thought, the first moment, not second, the very first moment of waking up. But the waking up, conception of the waking up is something you can recognize after first moment, so-called second moment, or third moment, and fourth moment, etc. And then we say, I wake up. But we completely forget this very first moment. That's why we completely ignore this one. Okay? Ignore. And then, but this first moment is very important, because this is the moment you can decolonize the world into two. From the truth, from the enlightened world and unenlightened world, to in the unenlightened world. Decolonize. This is, we don't know why. We don't know why we do this. Okay. We don't know why we dichotomize, you know, the world into two. Okay. From enlightened state to unenlightened state. We don't know exactly. But when you realize it, already you are in the unenlightened world. That is, at that time, we say, I have waked up. That's it. So the moment when you wake up, it's already you are unenlightened world. And then the people always attached to that world, only forgetting the first moment, which is exactly the same as the enlightened world. We forget. But this first moment is very important, because this is the first, very first moment when you can see how the world is structured between the enlightened and unenlightened. Enlightened world and unenlightened world always connected. Interconnected, interpenetrated. So it's one. But we don't know why we dichotomize in order to be in the unenlightened world. But already we do it. Okay? We have done it in that way. So that is called, we say, ignorance. Ignorance. So from where that ignorance comes, we don't know. But it's really there. Every day, there is. Okay? And then Buddhism emphasizes not to try to discover the first stage from where the ignorance comes. No. But we try to realize how important this first moment, how this ignorance is working, okay? Instead of liking or disliking, anyway. So, in other words, what makes it possible? Going to say, What make it possible for the ignorance to exist? Okay. Well, still you don't know exactly. Well, for instance, like that. Only human can reflect upon the shadow of the self, shadow, just like a story of Aesop's story, tale, Aesop's tale, the dog barks at the shadow of his, the reflecting in the water. He bark at him, shadow of him, like this is a human characteristic of human beings. Okay? Means we reflect ourselves. In other words, we look at ourselves, objectively. That is constantly reflect. And then we try to know what make it possible for reflection to be. In other words, what is the source of reflection which make it possible to exist? Okay? In other words, what is the source of letting the mind move? Okay. What do you mean? What is it? Okay. What make it possible for the mind to move? This is Buddhism try to understand constantly. Okay. Then finally, we say this is ignorance. Okay. Ignorance make the mind move. Ignorance make the mind reflect the self. But this ignorance is very vague, but practically it's very clear. So we don't know from where it comes. So Buddhism says it comes from beginningless. Okay? This is a very interesting point. Beginninglessness means you cannot chase back to the beginning of the ignorance from where it comes. You cannot trace back. But even though you cannot trace back, look at the reality, there is an ignorance. Even though from where it comes, even though we don't know where it is going to, but it's really there. Okay? That ignorance, we can realize that ignorance a little bit intellectually, sharp, very sharp intellectual sense. You can see it. And also that ignorance is exactly, in other words, what is the place where that ignorance exists? This is in the first moment. It is in the first moment. Okay? First moment is very touchy. If you touch it, it's already an enlightened one. If you don't, it's leave it quietly. So it's the faded away into, made it away into the enlightened world. So ignorance melted away into the enlightened world. But if you touch it, it becomes ignorance, immediate. So it always exists in the first moment. Very first moment between the enlightened and unenlightened world. Okay? So this is called ignorance, okay? So ignorance is exactly teaching at the bottom, the very first moment of the, unenlightened world, and also the very end of the truth, enlightened world, simultaneously. So bottom of the ignorance is really pure, something pure. But on the other hand, ignorance is the beginning of the ignorance is not pure. It's already defiled. So that's why ignorance is something very touchy, very touchy, okay? Very delicate. So very naturally, we have to realize it, okay? We have to realize that one. So that's why impermanence means moving, constantly moving. Impermanence is the truth that all are moving. Okay? So let's see what is the source of the moving. In other words, what makes it possible for all to move? So called impermanence. And finally, we reach so-called ignorance. So what is the ignorance? Ignorance is beginningless. It's there. Constantly. It's there means you cannot go this way or that way. It's always there. The inner moment. First moment there. And then when you touch to this one, second moment, then ignorance creates different world. If you're really there in the real first moment, you are anyway participating in the truth. Okay? So that is very touching. Okay? That's why this is called observation of impermanence. Okay? How impermanence is fabricated. Okay? We try to know. This is the Buddhist teaching, constantly. Through the philosophy, through the mental situation, and also through the practice. That is called Zazen. Okay? Zazen allows you to come back that source. That's why the Lotus Sutra always mentions why the Buddha teaches the Buddha's teaching, Saddhamma Pundarika Sutra. Because Buddha wants you to return to the source of your birth. Means how you were born. In other words, how your mind moved. So you have to come back that source. This is our practice. Okay? That is called observation or insight of impermanence. Okay? But people don't know exactly. Obviously, ignore that first moment and attaching to that the word after second. That's why we create lots of constantly problems. But Buddha knows this one. Okay? That's why impermanence means how petty human beings are. That's why constantly you have to be compassionate to the all sentient beings. We always do it. So impermanence is, simply speaking, according to the everydayness, Dogen Zenji mentions, you have to be compassionate, you have to give sympathy to all. To all. Okay. And that maybe tomorrow I would like to say eight lessons more today. That's all. Do you have a questions? Is that a little clear for you between the bodhicitta, body mind, why we have to arouse the body mind, and which is connected with the practice of observing the impermanence? Okay? A little bit clear for you? If you have a question, please.
You said, which I didn't quite get, that if you participate in the first moment, then you're near to the truth or you're in the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time it's the second moment, it's defiled
right.
By observation.
Observation, yes. That is egolessness, practice of egolessness. Tomorrow I will explain more. Very naturally, egolessness coming up. Practice of egolessness. How important practice of egolessness is. Naturally coming up. Well, the awakening of faith also mentions about this one. A little bit logically, systematically. Sure. Constantly. Very first moment.
But that doesn't make any room for thinking. Yeah. Once I start thinking, that first moment is way back.
It must be. Yes. The other day, one of the students asked me, what is the first moment, first thought of anger? Do you understand this? What is the first moment of anger? Do you? What is this? First moment of anger. That's very, tricky question. The first moment, first thought of the anger, the very tricky, you know. We don't understand it. Can't you understand the question? I don't understand. Because the first thought is the anger. What is the anger? What is the first thought? Completely different. Do you? One of the students says, anger has already lots of thoughts. She said, yes, exactly. But first thought, he is asking, what is the first thought of anger? What is this? The concept of anger. It's completely nothing. So that's why root of the anger is nothing. So in other words, anger itself possesses great powerful power to be free from anger itself. This is the truth. That's why Vimalakirti mentions about this one. From where the anger, good or bad, comes. He says it comes from the no root. So no root means the first moment, first thought of anger. That you have to anyway come back to. Not the idea, not as an idea. You have to come back to that source of anger. Practically, okay? That's pretty hard. But it's very simple. There is next issue. Egolessness. Okay? So, you mentioned almost the same thing. Is that clear for you?
No.
We have been always involved in the world after second. Well, broadly speaking, okay? and then we completely forget forget the existence of the first thought, or even though we know, we try to ignore it because it's impossible for us. We believe it seems to be impossible to practice it. That's why very naturally people become very spiritual. Okay? And then people become crazy spiritually, ignoring practicing with the body. Okay? Because it's impossible. We believe it seems to be impossible to practice, to be in the first moment, first thought. That's why let's jump it. that means chanting, creating your emotional energies, you know, and then plunging into one object, you know, constantly. They're ignoring your intellectual sense and its conscious function and etc. Emotionally, you're plunging into this is a huge way. But that is really dangerous, you know. Is that all right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Saddhama Pundalika mentions. Try to remember you of your past life. Okay? Past life means come back to the thoughts. Okay? Thoughts. The first moment of your birth. Let's come back. That first moment is exactly the past life extending, okay? Extended. It's really pervade. First moment is, if you are in the first moment, you can see the whole picture of the past. Okay? That is the first moment of your birth. So reading the past life doesn't mean what you did in the past. That makes you crazy. No, I don't think. Probably something you can. It is not the first important point. So you have to be in the first thought. That time you can see the panorama picture of your past life, and also you can see the panorama picture of your future. That's why you can create your life. Okay? Very creativity.
This thought is related to now, to experience.
Sure, now. That's why now and here. Okay? I don't know exactly what he said exactly. I don't remember. I think he doesn't say, almost I don't listen. I think he says, almost I make a mistake. I don't remember. Let me check, all right? Well, anyway, it means the master is always right in the middle of first moment. So that's why if you say, I can hear, it's already second thought. But if he say, I don't listen, it's already, you know, attached to the truth. So whatever he says, it doesn't need the mouth. So that's why he says, I almost. Do you? That's the stage of said. Look at the second case of a book record. I think Nansen talk about with the monk. Monk asking him, what is the truth is. The Nansen constantly is saying, I know the truth. Okay? So what is completely the, you know, pure and nothing to attach to. So they continually, the monks asking, what is the truth? Can't you realize, can't you be there always? And say, he said, I don't know. I don't know means being in the first moment is not I can be in the first moment. If you say, I am always in the first moment, that is already attachment. So being in the first moment is constantly you have to do it. Every time when you see each aspect of everydayness, okay, gesho, that's it, you know, simple. That is egolessness, practice. So he says, I don't know. And then the monk says, if you don't know, how do you know? How do you know you are there? Do you understand? And then the nonsense says, you are pretty smart. So you are pretty smart. So bow, leave it. Leave, go away. That's pretty good, isn't it? Yeah, our consciousness constantly talking about this one. How do you know? If you don't know, that's a pretty smart question. We are interested. We want to know that point. How do we know? If you don't know. But it is reality, anyway, first moment.
Be a first moment if karma is from beginningless time.
If a karma?
Karma. Uh-huh. Is from beginningless time.
Uh-huh.
How can there be a first moment?
Karma is, if a karma exists beginninglessly, I think it is not the, karma is not the something fabricated by idea. It's very pure sense. Real pure sense of karma. Okay? So no conception of the karma. That is called beginningless. Okay, but when you say, when you created ideas called karma, it is already, you know, the in terms of time process you create. You see the karma. You see the some situation of existence. So we put the name on it. That is called karma. Okay? So already you are involved in time process. You know? But real karma exists, beginningless means completely beyond the time process. Because you cannot trace back to. But it's existed here. It's existed here means already it's connected with the past. But we cannot trace back. But it's really here. Means you have to really come back to the first moment, first thought of the karma you can see. Because there is no other way. So if you want to know the truth through your birth, okay, how do you know? You have to use your five scandals, okay? and the six senses and six sense objects in itself. Without those, we cannot know. There is no other ways. So, using and dealing with those words, and then we have to see the real truth. How? That means we have to really come back to thoughts of the five senses, five sense organs, and the five skandhas. In other words, real thoughts of your birth. Okay? Very first thoughts of the birth. You have to come back. That is exactly connected with truth. And then that source is temporarily called beginningless, because it's we don't know. It's beginningless. First moment of your birth is exactly existent, beginningless. But beginningless means beginningless. If I say it exists, beginningless means cutting off intellectual sense, but I don't mean this one. But intellectual means beyond intellectual, you have to realize something real there. Then after this, we can see when you are there, when you put your body and mind right in the first moment, then you can see the panorama picture. Just like being on the top of a IDS towers. And then you can see the panorama picture of the Twin Cities. But intellectually, if you want to know, the panorama picture of the Twin Cities, you have to research, following the references, instead of being present in on the top of an IDS tower. So very naturally, intellectually, we want to research. But it seems to trace back to the beginning, but I don't think you can see the total picture or panoramic picture of the Twin City areas through that intellectual understanding. Okay? Through the intellectual understanding, you seem to trace back the source, but it is still intellectual. You can see the picture, but it is painted. So very naturally, the panorama picture of the Twin City area is you have to put your body and the mind on the top of the IDS towers, practically. Means the first moment of your birth. And then you can see that one. This is the practice, our practice. First moment of your waking up. Same thing.
It could be over and over.
First moment of your birth is a very vast of the world. Okay, it is not only connected with your parents and the you. It's connected with many. Visibly, invisibly. Okay, my first moment thought of my existence right now is very vast. It's connected with Japan, Minneapolis, I can see, but many countries, many planets, many beings, I cannot see. Okay? This is a source of my existence. This is the first thought of my existence right now. Is that clear? enough to your question. Comment? Your question, would you say it was not in your question?
My question has to do with conditioning.
Condition?
Conditioning.
Oh.
The things that we do because of previous things that have happened. And I'm wondering whether the first moment is free from conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Doctor.